Jewel by Chef Steps is a proud sponsor of Beer Sessions Radio. Jewel Sous Vide is the future of the kitchen. Jewel, perfect food every time. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. The topic? Restaurants and rules. Some rules are based on religion.
This makes for an unusual scene in a Manhattan restaurant. A shy 20-year-old dictating the kitchen standards to a humble veteran chef.
While other rules promote health and safety.
But who are these feared rule keepers with the power to shut a restaurant down?
They're not really like food lovers.
Some restaurant rules fall outside the domain of the kitchen.
All civil rights issues have basically, at one point or another, revolved around the bathroom.
For more, tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni, I'm the host, and today is Tuesday, December 4th, 2018. We've got a special show today. You know, it's New York City, there's over 30 breweries, and our guests are going to be opening another brewery, and we're really thrilled to have them. They're going to give us a lot of their background and what they're going through now. They're just starting in the opening process. So the guys from Wild East Brewing, who will be opening out in Gowanus in Brooklyn, are here. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Lindsay Steen. I was born and raised in Colorado and have lived in about five different states since then, including New York and New Jersey.
And now you're Wild East Brewing.
And now Wild East Brewing. Here we go.
All right.
I'm Tyler Marge. I'm originally from Southern California, and I lived in New York City for about 15 years now, and I currently reside in Gowanus, Brooklyn, where our brewery will also be opening.
Terrific.
I'm Brett Taylor, originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I've lived in Brooklyn since 2002, and I have a day job brewing at Fifth Hammer Brewing Company, and I am a co-founder of Wild East Brewing Company.
And Brett, to me, you're kind of the glue on this, because you've been on the show before, and I know you're from some homebrew events in the city, but you also before worked at Keg and Lantern with Jeff, who's here. Yeah. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jimmy. How's it going? Thanks for having me back.
Good.
So yeah, I'm Jeff Lyons. I'm originally from Detroit, seeing we're all doing origin stories today. And yeah, I've been about a dozen years in Bed-Stuy and work at Keg and Lantern for about 2 years now.
You know, so this is pretty cool. It's like there's a lot of new breweries in New York, and I feel like there's definitely room for new breweries that have good brewers, and there's always room for another brewery. So I feel like we're at that stage in New York. I don't think we're close to capacity or anything. And I don't know if you guys obviously don't feel that way since you're opening. So give us a little bit of your backstory, your inspiration. I know, Brett, you know, I'm always impressed with your beers. And I know that you and Tyler started collaborating a while ago with some homebrewers. But who wants to start talking about how you guys first met and this project got started?
Sure, I'll jump in. I had had the typical homebrewer dream of wanting to open a brewery. And it never subsided. It just got stronger. And I knew I wanted to make farmhouse type styles of beer, mixed fermentation beer, Brettanomyces focused beers, and barrel aged sour beer. And Tyler, who I'd known through the homebrew community, when I was just looking for people and for help and to like get this thing going. And he approached me, and we hit it off, because he. He's a great brewer. He's got a great palate, and he sort of brought a lot of things to the party that I didn't have. And then I'm going to hand it off to Tyler
I want to say that, just giving you some props. I mean, like I said, I knew you from some of the homebrew events. You did homebrew jamboree at Jimmy's Number 43 with Josh Bernstein a couple of times. But then we had you on with Jeff from Keg and Lantern, and then I found out you were working at Fifth Hammer. So. You've obviously learned a lot from working in breweries. Anything you want to tell us about that experience? You know, it's like you're lucky. You've worked at two breweries before you even opened your own.
Well, I actually, it goes back to 2011. I had an internship at Six Point, and like Ian and Sean that were there, they and Danny Bruckert, they helped me a lot to learn the very basics of how to work in a brew house. And then I went to brewing school after that, and when Strong Rope was first open, Jason's an old friend of mine, and we, you know, he needed some help in the brew house, and so I was coming in, even while I was still working in my previous career, I was able to help out Jason and just give him a little bit of support so that he could break away and do the things that founders do. And that's kind of where I'm at Fifth Hammer right now, too. Like, I take so much pride in just making Chris's beer and giving, and every time he goes and plays a Chris Kuzmi, that is founder. Every time he goes and plays a you know, he's a jazz musician and goes and plays, I take a lot of pride in that because I feel like I help make that possible.
And Jeff, you had Brett was working for you for a while at Keg and Lantern. What are some of his strengths? You know, if you were recommending him to other people opening a brewery.
I don't have to because thankfully he's opening his own. It's fantastic. I can't wait for this. But yeah, when I left Greenpoint Beer and Ale and had the opportunity to go to Keg and Lantern, I think I probably said this last time we were on, and I was 100% serious and honest with it and hold by it that there were two main reasons that I went to Keg and Lantern, and one of them was Brett. The other was that we're opening a new space, and I kind of wanted to go through that process basically on somebody else's dime before I had to do it for real for myself. So we're actually in the process of doing that, opening the space in Red Hook. But yeah, Brett's amazing. I think what he touched on, I just think we have similar taste in beer. I think we really like dry beer. We really like mixed fermentation beers with a lot of, you know, Brettanomyces and bacteria and a lot of depth to them. So I think that lined up really well. And I didn't know him as a brewery employee until we started working together, and that worked out amazingly as well.
Well, that's a great start. What beer are we drinking now?
So this is a mixed fermentation. It's a Saison with a mixed fermentation. This is one of the older bottles, an older 2016 beer. And it's, you know, it's a house culture that we...
So it's a wild yeast prototype.
It's carefully constructed wild... It is a wild yeast prototype. Yes. But I sort of carefully built the blend and then let it go do its thing over the course of many generations. So, you know, I like it a lot. I've made really good homebrew with it, but you know, when we open up the brewery, it still has to make the team. So if I make new mixes and they're better, then sorry.
So wild yeast.
Yeah.
This is a cool name. Tyler, tell us. Tell us how you got involved with Brett and some of your backstory.
Sure. Yeah, so me and Brett go pretty far back, as does Jeff. We were always entering these different competitions that were, you know, like open to the public. You'd go, you'd brew 5 gallons of beer. They'd sell tickets. People would come in the door and random.
Like what, like Pride of Brooklyn?
Yeah, Pride of Brooklyn, you know.
Homebrew Jamboree,
Brooklyn Wart. Yep, there were quite a few. It seems like there used to be more than there is now, but
because everybody's now becoming a pro brewer, that's why.
Yeah, all the good brewers like Brett are no longer involved, or people like us that have decided to open a brewery are no longer doing those. But there are plenty of those still going on. But so anyway, I met Brett back probably in like 2012, 2013. I think we always had a mutual respect for each other in terms of brewing. I always really liked his beer. He was always doing something different, and that's what really impressed me about him. A lot of people were making the same style of beers, IPAs, stouts, brown ales, you know, whatever. And he was always kind of like off in his own world doing these amazing mixed fermentation beers, Brett beers, you know, sours. And no one was really doing those at that time, and that really impressed me, and that really, you know, that he earned my respect in that way. And then eventually I found out he had plans to open a brewery, and I kind of jumped at the opportunity to at least talk to him and ask if I can get involved in any way. And I was like, I was willing to, you know, just be a small investor if nothing else. I just wanted to be a part of it because I knew he was going to be so successful as a professional. And so I don't remember how it exactly happened, but we sat down together. I got a meeting with him, like he's like a big Hollywood agent or something. But anyway, we got a meeting. We met up at Elf Farm, and I kind of just like pitched my proposal to somehow be involved. And it turned out he was not only interested in getting me involved as like an investor, but he was looking for a partner in the project. And that's really how it all started. And from there, from day one, we hit the ground running, working on the business plan. I think the original plan was to do something a little smaller and modest, almost like a nano brewery. And I said, hey, like, if we're really going to quit our day jobs and do this and, make some decent money so that we can, support ourselves and make this a job, we should think a little bigger.
And you guys are finding a lot of support from the city brewers, like David at Fifth Hammer, you said, has been giving you a lot of feedback. Because right. You've got a lease, you've got a space, you're going to start looking at what contractors and everything.
Yeah, we're bidding out to our contractors right now. So that's the next step. We're hoping we can start construction right after the new year, probably ideally January 2nd. We keep saying that almost as a joke, but I think at this point it's
I mean 100% January 2nd.
Or the
6th. Well, this is cool because we don't really meet too many breweries that are just at this stage where you just signed a lease and you're just getting going. And then Lindsay Steen, tell us again how you joined, because you're the last of the three here.
So I was like the outsider coming in a way. I had wanted to open a brewery of my own, and I don't know where I start in this whole process, but I had been working in sales for about 10 years and wanted to do something on my own. A lot of ideas had run through my head, but I really love beer and I love the community of beer.
And you have like a science background too.
I do have a science background and a sales background, and my sales and science actually melded together because I was in scientific and industrial and pharmaceutical manufacturing sales. So I covered managed six states from here all the way up to Maine, and throughout all my travels was all about beer. And being from Colorado, a huge beer state, it's just always been in me. And once I started thinking about what I wanted to do, I wanted to open a brewery.
I'm going to jump in and say that your background is similar to Mary Isa. It's a Fifth Hammer. She was a scientist and in sales.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool. Like even 5 years ago, people were like, oh, where are the women in beer?
Yeah.
And it's almost like you have to have a model to follow. And everyone's like, oh, that's the Mary Isette role. It's like she's got science, she's got sales, she's a great brewer. I don't know if you're seeing that, if you guys have seen that, where not too long ago, there weren't as many women being considered as brewers or owners.
Right.
I don't know if anyone else wants to weigh in on that, or Lindsay, you want to keep talking about that. Any other role models for you, or did you ever think you wouldn't open a brewery? I mean,
no. One day I decided I was going to do it, and if you ask a lot of my friends, I'm the get shit done person. And I had started writing a business plan with another female friend of mine, and a few things happened with her and with her family, and she had to move back to Colorado. So I kind of had to regather and figure out where do I go from here, because this was not something that, it's possible to do it on your own. It's difficult. And you just want to have other people to weigh in and give input on business plan, on everything. So this was definitely not the route I thought I would go, but I just started working as much as I could and thought, okay, I really need other people. And that's
what
when
are some
I
decisions
found,
you guys have had to make recently together that you may not have made on your own, or that you've helped each other out?
That's a good question. We make decisions every hour.
Every hour. Right?
A big one was choosing our equipment manufacturer, and the options, I brew on an ABE system at Fifth Hammer, and I like that, and they were really working with us, but there's a part of me was like, let's look at DME. And these guys really were like, you know what? Let's go with the one that you work on. And that's great because DME just went out of business last week. So
that's what I was going to ask you. They're the ones that went out of business.
Yeah.
So people put money down and lost their money too.
Yeah. Because I was willing to go kind of 50-50 and just like, you know, I mean, DME wasn't offering some of the things that we really wanted on a system, but these guys were like pretty vehement about the fact that if we like the system that we're brewing on and that I'm brewing on, and if they'll make, they'll add the amenities that we want to have, they're like, let's just do that. So yeah, there's a potential train wreck avoided.
I will say somehow our team, we always kind of have the same gut decision when mm-hmm. it comes to things like this. So I can't think of one example where we've all gone separate ways on a decision, or
even two. One's pretty rare, honestly.
Yeah.
So I mean, that makes it a lot easier because you do make big decisions. Like if we would have gone with DME and we would have lost the investment on that, I don't know what would have happened.
How much money would you have to put down for the type of system you're looking at? Just approximately.
$125,000.
Wow.
So there's a chance that if your manufacturer goes out of business, then that money could just go up in smoke. And that's devastating when you think about how expensive it is to start a brewery to begin with. You can't really, I mean, you can spare, you can deal with losses here and there, like tiny losses, but I don't know how some breweries that deal with these massive losses, I don't know how they recover from that. In the startup stage, I mean, when every dollar counts, that's difficult.
Are we talking about our decisions?
Yeah, sure. Or did that freak? Did were you aware that the manufacturer went out of business last week?
I mean, oh yeah.
And you guys talked about that.
Oh,
a lot.
Oh yeah, sure. No, we talked about that a lot, and just that we've just the decisions that we've all chosen thus far have been very good and well thought out and discussed. And I think, you know, that's another thing just about having three people here is that, hey, if one of us is unavailable, or you know, we want to go on vacation or whatever, there's always two of us there to weigh in on these decisions. Obviously major important decisions, like the decision to go with ABE, we all, you know, we did investigate several manufacturers and all decided this was the right decision to go with and have not regretted it.
Well, guys, so, we're off for a great start. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. The holidays are just around the corner, and at Beer Sessions Radio, we don't just care about what's in your glass. There's one smart kitchen appliance that can make the best Thanksgiving turkey you've ever tasted, for real. Joule Sous Vide uses precise temperature control and trademarked visual doneness guides to make perfect food every time. Cook incredible dishes at home via the Joule app on your phone or tablet. Or try voice-controlled cooking with the Joule Amazon Alexa skill. Hey Alexa, dial me up a brisket. There's zero guesswork, so steak, chicken, seafood, turkey, roasts, eggs, all come out exactly the way you like them. Just be sure to save room for pumpkin pie. Joule, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/joule and enter our code HRN to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/joule and enter our code HRN. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, heritageradionetwork.org. Join, become a member, and there's end of year giving. Just last night there was a great annual fundraiser at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. But check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member. A lot of cool things happen on this network of over 30 shows. And we're very proud to be in our ninth year, over 450 shows, all thanks to the support of sponsors and the network in general. So, guys, we're talking with the Wild East Brewing Kids who are just signed a lease, and hopefully in 2019 they'll be opening the brewery in Gowanus, Brooklyn. But we were just talking about some of the pitfalls of when you're getting started. So, Brett, you said that you were deciding between two different equipment manufacturers, and one of them went out of business just last week. So you're lucky you picked the right one.
Yeah. I mean, we were probably going to go with ABE all along, but you know, you have to entertain these other, you know, other, you have to do your homework. and make sure you get the price and the system you want. And when it, you know, when it came down to it, AB really really was making the system that we wanted to have. They I asked for things that were not typical, and they in most cases didn't. They gave it to me without an additional charge.
And Jeff from Keg and Lantern, you mentioned too that you guys, as you're expanding Keg and Lantern, you guys had a similar issue with an equipment manufacturer.
Yeah. And Brett was actually with us while we were going through this process. But as we were deciding on what the new system in the new space would be, we ended up going with ABE for a number of reasons, mostly because their customer service is awesome. Shout out to Amanda. She rules. But we decided to do that, and literally within maybe a week or two after we actually signed and sent the deposit in with ABE, the sort of B of the AB discussion went out of business as well, a totally different company.
Which company was that?
So that was Metalworks, right? And there were a number of local Metalcraft. Yeah.
I did that to you, sorry.
Thanks, Matt.
There were a number of local breweries. There were quite a few breweries throughout the country affected, but I don't know if I should.
I think you can mention. I think Barry had to go deal with that. Was it a couple years ago?
Grimm, fairly famously, we can mention them because it's been all over
Grimm,
the press.
Threes also had
tanks. Yeah, so Grimm and Threes and Other Half and a few other local breweries all had systems at various stages of, you know, they had already signed, sent their deposit in, and were expecting systems that said some kind of timeline, and all three of them basically got hung out to dry. And I think Threes kind of let the whole thing go, as far as I know.
I don't know.
But anyway, Grimm went out there and literally went to the warehouse, took what was, you know, partially constructed, and then found a way to complete that construction, and it cost them a good deal of time and therefore a good deal of money before they were able to get open because of that.
Wow, I never would. I've heard of things like signing a lease on a property and forgetting that you need to have gas lines or, you know, other issues like that. Are there any other thing that have come up or that you guys have been aware of in your planning that you hope to avoid? I feel like this is a Lindsay question. I know she's making all the tough calls.
We had so many.
You put me on the spot.
It's okay.
I guess it's, you know, every space is so different, and you want, of course, something that's absolutely perfect. But like you said, you know, a gas line. When you go in and look at the space, you look to see, do drains exist here? How big is the water pipe? How big is the gas line? Those are all things that if it's not there or if it's too small, something that's, you know, you're going to have to upgrade it in order to run a brewery.
And some of those things could be like an extra year.
It can
right?
be very costly. Sprinkler system is another thing that I think a few other breweries have had to drop some pretty big money on because there's no sprinkler system in place and that you need to have one. So there's a lot of things to look for when you're looking at a space that you don't unexpectedly get slapped for a bill with a bill after you sign it. So those are things we've learned from other people that have been really good at, you know, giving us advice.
And then on, going back to the system itself. So I know when you're going from home brewing to pro brewing, a lot of it, Brett, is scaling up your recipes and learning how to do them a little more, what's a good word, methodical?
Yeah.
Tell us what that like. So you're going to be working with a system you're familiar with. You know, what are some recipes that you have in mind to brew when you guys open?
Sure. We want to do a lot of mixed fermentation saison. We want to do Brett beers. We want to do like Brett like a Brett blonde, a Brett IPA, but not beers that are particularly funky. We want to sort of play around with the New England style IPA, but with Brettanomyces and some really fruit forward Brett blends, and let that sort of coalesce with the hops and go to a new level. So those are things that, you know, we're going to do, but you know, and then obviously the saison, mixed fermentation, all the sort of the whole portfolio of like Belgian and French farmhouse type beers. But you know, we also want to do Berliner Weiss that's not kettle soured. We want to do a live Berliner Weiss, and we want to do it pretty quickly, which we can do with the cultures that we use. that I think is something that I don't know. I don't know if anybody else is doing it. Maybe Grimm locally, but you know, I don't know. Others may be doing it. I'm not sure. It's just, you know, we don't really measure ourselves against anybody else. We just sort of like want to make our beer and, you know, be a part of the community. So, those beers and then some sort of rusticated lagers, that's sort of like our.
Are you developing your own yeasts? Is that what you said?
We are working on some. Lindsay's got a great barn out in New Jersey that we're going to do some cool shipping in and try to get some cultures. She picked some fruit out there as well.
The cultures are in the works.
Yeah. I have a persimmon tree in my backyard that they're just starting to get so ripe they're going to fall off. So I'm going to pull some of those down. And I've had pretty good success with just wild stuff in Brooklyn. So I'd love to do something. I'd love to take a culture from the Greenwood Cemetery and call it like zombie yeast or something.
Zombie dust is already taken. Yeah.
So Lindsay, you're the one with that secret barn.
That's a very secret barn, yeah.
So you do have a place you're doing experiments.
Mm-hmm. Not really yet. For the most part, we either brew. If we have to brew a beer for like to like when we were trying to attract investors, we would either brew it out at Lindsay's barn, but more often I would write a recipe and Tyler would brew it at his place. So that's basically because I'm a working professional brewer. I don't have a lot of time for home brewing. I think that I do. I like to think that I do, but I never do. So like Tyler was making a lot of beer for a while.
Good stuff. And Jeff, tell us more about Bread as a Brewer, because every time I've had you on, I mean, you're kind of quiet, but you get things done, Brett. And I always like to hear you talk because you're saying things that not too many other brewers are saying.
It's amazing to be called quiet. It's rare. Go ahead, Jeff.
you're reserved.
You're not.
As am I at times.
You're not quiet, Jeff.
I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of reverence for Brett. I similar to Tyler's story. I mean, I used to work at the Brooklyn Homebrew, and Brett was a very regular customer. And every time he'd come in, I'd my eyes would light up because it always meant we were going to have a great conversation. And when we were fortunate enough for him to bring some bottles of his own homebrew in, that was always a great experience as well. And you always knew you were going to learn something. So, I mean, for me, it all starts there, and it all starts with basically just thinking outside of the box. And I think that I think we're all kind of cut from a similar cloth in that, and in that we really like to do things in a very different way, make different beers, think about different processes, and just really go about things in a very different way. And you know, that's part of why I'm so excited for these guys to get open. Is just sort of seeing something that you've dreamed of actually come to fruition and to be a huge champion.
Let's do this brewer to brewer. So Brett, this next beer that you poured, let's taste it, and I want Jeff to ask you some questions about it. All right, and you guys too can also ask him questions about it.
As you're pouring, I'll just interject that some of us, and I'm not trying to sully your good name, my sir, but some of us are able to find the time to still homebrew and just kind of bang it out despite the wishes of our wives. You only have so many days at home and so much time, and if you're willing to take half a day and
so you're brewing all day, Jeff, but then you get home and you still want to brew.
You go home, and on the weekend when you have a day off, you still knock out a batch. And yeah,
all right, so Brett, tell us about this beer, because again, this is something that you might be making with wild yeast when you guys open.
Yeah, sure. So this is my take on a Hommel beer, and essentially
it's like the Belgian, like a Hommel beer.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a saison. It's a very hoppy saison. So what I did with this was make a sort of saison base with a lot of.
So there's one. It's called like Poppering's Hommel.
Right.
It's exactly. A little more of like a hoppy pale ale.
Right. But this is a very American version. So Jeff had a recipe that we made over at Keg and Lantern, and I had never even heard of the style until we made that beer. And then doing more research, I saw that Jester King does a version, and they used a lot of orange in theirs. So I played around with that a little bit. I used orange forward hops, Columbus, Chinook, and then some Citra, and then there's orange zest in it, and then an orange flesh in the primary fermentation, and then it's a mixed fermentation, you know, saison yeast, Brettanomyces, and lactobacillus, it's pretty highly carbed. Last night when I was tasting bottles to decide what to bring on, the cork hit the ceiling pretty hard, but I brought a capped one this time.
It comes through. It's actually nice that it is so carbonated.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. I love it. It's pushing 4 volumes. It's peppery.
Most beers are at 2.5.
It's pretty highly carbed in it, and it kind of gets foamy on the palate, which I kind of like.
It's the perfect brunch beer.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Really,
yeah, it's almost like a mimosa. Huh?
Totally. Yeah.
And what are questions you? So like, this is a great beer. Brett just tasted us. You guys as partners, do you ask some questions about it? Do you weigh in on it, or are you just like, wow, this is a great brunch beer? Let's sell it.
I mean, those thoughts immediately come to mind. I mean, when we drink any beer,
totally.
Like, this would be great at XYZ. That stuff immediately.
Absolutely. I definitely think, like, just from a sales mind, is like, well, how am I going to sell this? Especially to, you know, one of our big goals is selling to non-beer drinkers. How do I sell this to a wine drinker? How do I sell this to a female? Because, I mean, statistics show there's a lot less female drinkers than male drinkers, beer drinkers. You know, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you drink this? Brunch beer. So that then carries on to, you know, selling it to the right restaurants or clients, you know, that can get communicated.
So you're at that good phase now where you're really planning out. Well, tell us a few things about the plans for the brewery. So it's going to be more of a tasting room. What are some of the plans you have?
It's going to be as much of a tasting room as it is a production facility. But we do plan to do, ideally, we'd like to do most of our sales in-house.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big space. It's especially for New York City, I would say, I don't know on average what the size of a brewery is in New York City, but it's a lot, I won't say a lot bigger, but it's a little bigger than a handful of other breweries that I'm aware of, and it's bigger than a lot of the spaces that
and
we
it's next. It's next to what that place, Littlefield, right?
Right.
So people kind of know where it is. It's got
we couldn't
a good
be,
place to gather.
We couldn't be happier with the location. I mean, it's right off the subway. It's a great neighborhood that's growing, perfect demographic for people that drink these kind of beers, and you know, lots of new restaurants and bars and other establishments popping up all over. So we really, it's great because we didn't feel like we settled for a location. I think we held out for an insane amount of time.
We did not settle.
No.
We there was many times when we almost settled, and the negotiations took so long on the space that there was one point where we literally almost gave up, and we said, all right, forget this, we're moving on, we're done negotiating this because it's wasting time. And we started looking at other spaces, and then it kind of came back and everything fell in the place.
I'd have to say at that moment, that's where three people was very helpful, because there was always one person to keep us with a level mind. It's like, no,
get
it this way. There was always somebody to level us out. Like, this is the space. We'll make it work.
Yeah. That was the most emotional decision I think we had
absolutely.
To make. And I mean, location is practically, I mean, obviously beer is the most important thing, but location's right behind that with one of the most important decisions I think you have to make.
So you're right next to Littlefield. And what other breweries are really close?
We're equidistant between Threes and Strong Rope, who we hugely respect.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously I used to work with Jason, but you know, I've been friends with Jason since forever. He's one of the most beautiful humans alive, especially in the beer community, and Threes has been very, very friendly and helpful and just, you know, supportive of what we're doing. And I think that we're a nice little Venn diagram, because we make beers that are similar to Threes, but like they taste very different. Like stylistically we're in the same sort of range. So I think that, you know,
so we could create a Gowanus beer trail,
little Gowanus like farmhouse
Threes
style.
Wild East
yeah
folks beer
strong
other
rope.
Half and Strong Rope, right?
Yep. Yeah,
And there are others coming, but yeah. It's not my place to talk about it.
Well, you guys really, you're so an insider, Brett. It's unbelievable. So the New York City Brewers Guild, I mean, you've worked at quite a few of these breweries. I mean, do you feel good about that? You must have a lot of friends that are brewers at other breweries.
No other industry does effectively a competitor bring you on because you are opening a brewery and they can't necessarily pay you to work full time, and yet they will coach you in the process of opening your company. And Fifth Hammer, KCBC, Fibros in particular have been awesome in coaching. They're coaching us through this whole thing, all of them. But like every brewery has been friendly and receptive and helpful. And it's such a great community. I get to get up in the morning and I make beer every day, and then afterward I get to go hang out with the awesomest people, like, the most inviting community.
Yeah, everyone's 100%. Amazing.
Yeah, it's so collaborative.
It's unlike any other industry I can think of.
Completely. I mean, you ask anybody a question, and there's never a sense of,
So, Lindsay, what sold these guys on you? Because you were ready to open a brewery. Your potential partner didn't work out. What was the clincher that made you want to work with Tyler and Brett?
It was weird. There were two things involved. I mean, I read through their business plan, and what I had to contribute to that, I feel like I, filled some holes that were in it, and it just kind of fit together like a puzzle. I was very pessimistic going into it, and after I read it, it was very much more scientific, and that hit my special little scientist note in my heart. And just the other part was the chemistry. It just was meeting them and how our conversation flowed, and just everything felt right. When you meet someone, there's just that gut feeling that this is the right thing. That's really what it was. I mean, we all complemented each other very well in our skills and our perspectives, our, knowledge base, all that. So, yeah.
Do you guys feel like you can all talk beer equally? Like, Jeff mentioned what the carbonation, you said the carbonation was 4, and Jeff said it's typically 2.5. I mean, on the technical sides, do you guys all feel pretty comfortable talking?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are there any questions that you ever have? Like, Tyler, for Brett, like with this beer that he just made, the breakfast brunch. I think I just named it for you. Breakfast brunch.
You have to talk to marketing, though.
Yeah, marketing.
That's a little on the nose to me. I think we're gonna have to get a little more creative with that, but... Yeah, in terms of, so the way I always, I mean, the way I approach my own beer is, I think there's almost always room for improvement.
Yeah.
It's, you can't really just rest on your laurels and say, all right, this beer is perfect. No changes needed. But, there are times when that's the case, but you always have to think about what can we do? And I think, if there is a beer that's perfect, in which Brett has a knack for executing, I think it's like, what can we
it's
add to this?
Never been done.
I think what I'm thinking about is, okay, this is a great base beer. We can serve this as is. Can we add fruit to this? Can we make it seasonal? Can there be something we add to it in the fall? Is there something we can add to it in the spring, summer, etc.? Just thinking about like what else, like how much more potential does this beer have beyond what the base is?
Wow. Yeah, that's cool, guys. We have to take one more break. We'll be back in another minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thank you. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we got the guys from Wild East Brewing here, Lindsay, Tyler, and Brett, and Jeff Lyons from Keg and Lantern. So Matt, our engineer, just said, oh, can I try the Four Volumes beer? You're talking about marketing and naming. You guys just signed a lease. You're going to be doing a lot of construction and all that. But this is a really great beer. You said it's a breakfast brunch beer. It's a four volumes. It's a higher carbonation than a typical Brett. You know, how are you guys going to pick what beers you end up serving? And I know you're going to have some fun with the tap room, and you're going to be able to make different batches, I'm sure, and sell it that way. I mean, is that how you're going into it? You're just going to make different beers and see what moves, or are you going to have any strategies as you're planning out?
I will say one thing we're striving to do is have something for everyone. And I know that might sound kind of too broad, but we know as individuals, we like a range of beers. We know everyone has their preference. One thing we don't want to do is go in and just say, like, hey, we're an all sour brewery, we're an all bread brewery, we're all this, that. You know, we want to have, you know, Pilsners, New England IPAs, and then like the heart of our brewery, or the core offering, is the mixed fermentation, something like this. What we're calling the brunch beer, which is to be named later, I guess.
Four volumes brunch beer.
But that's something that I think we're going to be conscious of going into opening. We want to showcase what we're capable of doing. We want to stay within our wheelhouse. But I think besides the fact that Brett can really hit it out of the park with beers like this that are, you know, mixed fermentation sours and wild ales, so to speak. Brett makes an awesome Pilsner, and he makes an award-winning Pilsner.
Tyler's is better, though.
Well,
Tyler, you're a BJCP judge.
Yeah.
Have you guys, are there any particular awards you've won for your Pilsners? Certain homebrew competitions or any other that come to mind? Or just amongst your friends?
I've never won a homebrew award for a lager, but I've never entered it in competition.
But you like his pills. He likes your pills.
You won, yeah, I think at our
pills respect.
You won an unofficial award at a homebrew club meetup that I was at, where everyone in the room unanimously voted it the best beer of the night out of, you know, several dozen beers. So I think that counts.
But then you did the same thing, what, a month or two ago?
Exactly a month ago. Literally exactly a month ago.
So. Okay, the point is, as a brewery, we can execute a Pilsner.
Yes.
And but back to your point, yes, we want something for everyone. We don't want to be... We want to be known as the brewery that does what we do best, which is mixed fermentation, sour, wild.
Okay, on that note, we have a question from our Instagram follower, Octobird, at Octobird, that we know him. I know Mr. J.M. Hammond. On your website, a lot of the information says that you're going to be a farmhouse-style brewery. You know, there's some photos of brewing at a barn. How are you going to bring the farmhouse to the city since you're brewing in Gowanus, Brooklyn? Thank you, Octobird.
Thank you, Akbar. Yeah, it's more of it's an aesthetics thing. It's our mentality more than anything. A lot of adjuncts, you know. I thought I brewed with a lot of adjuncts, and then I started brewing with Jeff, and we made some saisons that were the actual malted barley was an afterthought. So Jeff's laughing. Yes, he's laughing, and so am I. And so, like, yeah, that's the thing. That's where I got my idea for the 75% oat saison that I want to brew with chamomile and I'm giving away my ideas now. But there are so many things. Like, it's brewing. First of all, using it local enough ingredients. We're gonna have a farmhouse license. Or a farm license as well as a microbrewer's license, and using those New York ingredients. For farmhouse beer, we want to use New York ingredients or North Jersey ingredients. Excuse me. And then a lot of mixed fermentation to get into that sort of. But that's sort of the chic American craft beer version of farmhouse brewing. But like, it's brewing with what you have and brewing with local ingredients and as opposed to sourcing from the best stuff available around the world. Not to say that New York ingredients aren't some of the best around the world, but we will be working with those for our farmhouse beers.
That's great. Let's jump to the potential of what you guys are doing. So with a good example is Keg and Lantern. So Jeff, remember it wasn't too many years ago that Keg and Lantern was just a restaurant brewery. You could only get the beer at the bar. And I remember one time your brewer brought me, not for resale, a small cask of some of your beer. And I really got into Keg and Lantern. I think I remember I had a couple wholesale kegs when that happened. So, you know, what was the step up for you guys? And at what point did you come in? Because we're actually drinking one of your beers now, aren't we?
Yeah, so what's in the glass is, we call it Stolen Valor. It's a Bohemian Pilsner. And I think, you know, just stylistically, it's something that Brett and I both love. I know Tyler has a love for
it.
Sorry,
it.
Lindsay.
I
don't
know. You know, when you poured it, it smells like beer.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I think of beer and before New England IPAs.
And
when I was like 10.
Yeah. Right. The whole lager thing goes, you know, it brings back underage drinking or your first beers once you turn exactly 21, right? Yeah. I think lager
smells
does
like
that for
beer,
a lot of people.
It's not hops. It smells like beer.
Yeah, and I think that there's a beautiful reemergence of lager style beers in newer craft brewers nationwide and locally as well. And I think everybody in this room really appreciates that.
That's good. I mean, New York has a great tradition of lagers, you know, going back to Rheingold, and this could be one of the great new New York lagers, man.
Oh, so we were
congratulations.
Thank you. You were asking about distribution and whatnot with Keg and Lantern, though. Yeah, exactly. So Patrick Allen was the head brewer from sort of conception, you know, from when the owner envisioned having a craft brewery, a very small brewery in the basement of his existing sort of Irish pub. PJ was the one that helped make that vision happen with the owner. And then about 2 years into the deal, you know, he decided it was time. He had a child. It was time for him to move family upstate a little bit, and he had an opportunity to help an old friend open Westkill Brewing. They're awesome. Check out their beers when you get the chance. But
I want to try the beers. I mean, I don't think we've had them on since they opened up, but up in the Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
Then for you guys, so it went from restaurant brewery, just to give it a sense of what you could be, restaurant brewery.
So then the, you know, PJ and the owner Kieran opened a. They put a 3-barrel system down in the basement that you wouldn't think you'd be able to do something like that in. It's very sort of cramped, but then you get used to it and it doesn't feel so cramped. But it's pretty amazing. Everybody walks down there the first time and just kind of blows their minds. Like, how do you even envision this, let alone, you know, make this happen and then make beer here? So that was going on. Everything was being served in-house, aside from a few special things that PJ would do for close friends, like you guys had worked out. And then when I came on, I just, you know, I looked at Brett and I said, hey, we've got to step on the accelerator a little bit. We got to make a little bit more beer, and the best way to do that is to start sending some of it out the doors. So, you know, and when I say some of it, I'm talking very little of it. We're talking about, you know, a handful of kegs every week that we're able to spare. That we don't just sell in house at the bar, and you guys were great at supporting us, and they're, you know, we have some close friends that helped us get going, and we've been fortunate enough to sort of expand that a little bit and grow our group of friendly faces and people who buy our beer periodically, and it sort of helps sustain us and allows us to make a little bit more beer, just keep new styles turning a little bit more quickly than we would otherwise.
And then you guys, Tyler, Lindsay, you know, looking to, what are some other breweries in New York City or other places that you look to that you might try to emulate in terms of how they open, their formats, any other things that inspire you?
Just from a straight product standpoint, I'm a big fan of Suarez upstate. I think they really, it's kind of like, I'd almost call it the child of Hill Farmstead because of the alumni there with Dan, but Yeah, just everything, like every style is done so with such excellence and such great balance, and but lots of flavor, and you know, it's everything you could hope it would be. So for me, that's what I hope we can achieve from a product standpoint. And there's lots of great stuff happening in New York City. You know, I guess to name a few, I think what Graham is doing is great. Of course, Fifth Hammer, our neighbors, Threes. I think I give a lot of props to Jason at Strong Rope for using all New York State ingredients. I mean, he's really quite a, like, he's kind of the pioneer for New York
City. He'll be on it in 2 weeks. I think it's December 18th, or in 2 weeks we have a New York sourcing ingredient show with Jason Saylor. But talk about Suarez. One thing that's interesting, I was up there tasting, I think in 2016, before they had opened, and he had from his like homebrew and small batch stuff. It was kind of like what you're doing, Brett. He had a lot of fruit, sours, wild fermented. But when he opened, the thing that he was selling was really dry pilsners.
Yeah.
And you want to comment on that, or?
Yeah, they're dry, but they're soft. They're luscious beers. They're just, they like you go back in for another sip as soon as you swallow. Like there's, it's just, you can, there's, they're fabulous.
So what's the secret to that Suarez pills?
I would argue water and getting your hopping rates right. Hop the malt ratio in your water. I think that's probably the key. And
are you guys gonna make a pills?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And a Helles.
And a Helles too.
Yeah.
So you got pills, Helles, some wild fermented, farmsteady beers.
I gotta try to keep up with the Keg and Lantern Helles though. It's the best one in New York City by a country mile.
Well, that's this Bohemian Pills is really great, Jeff too. And for you guys, anything else you want to say about the relationships here? Brett having worked with Keg and Lantern, Fifth Hammer. Any other inspirations you guys are seeing? You know, because you're still really you're in the planning stages, kind of. You know, you've just signed a lease.
Why is everybody looking at me?
Because you go to more breweries than any of us.
So. Yeah.
I'm known to travel a lot, and I find breweries in every corner of the world that I go to.
She's been to that one in Jordan.
I have been to Caracal in Jordan, and it was a wonderful experience, an amazing experience.
What do you like in a brewery when you walk in?
I mean, honestly, there's so much. I think it's the attitude, the vibe, the friendliness, the I think a big part for me is just willingness to educate the customer if they don't know what they want. And as a female, I think that's a really important thing because there's so many female drinkers that want to understand beer, that they're very intimidated by it because whatever, but that's a really important thing in a brewery, is just their openness to taking the time to help you understand what you might like and giving you tastings and helping you understand the entire process of beer, because it's very interesting and not many people know about it. You know, just, I don't know, a lot of that kind of stuff. And some breweries have, you know, different levels of that, but I don't know. I guess that's...
I'll tell you, I'm really rooting for you guys, and I'm looking forward to this. We're going to have to wrap it up. One more time, everybody, just say your name. You don't have to say where you're from, but say your name and what brewery you work for. Let's go around the room.
Lindsay Steen, Wild East Brewing Company.
Tyler March, Wild East Brewing Company.
Brett Taylor, Wild East Brewing Company. Current day job, Fifth Hammer Brewing Company.
Jeff Lyons, Keg and Lantern.
Well, you guys are great, man. Thanks for we've never done a show like this before. You guys just signed a lease. We got you at the opening phases, and we're going to have you back again before you open. We'll see how far you've come and how long it takes you, but definitely looking forward to talking to you guys again. And Brett, always great having you on. I love your beers, man.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
everybody. Producer Justin Kennedy, Matt Patterson, our engineer, Dylan Hoyer, our intern. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining us on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.